Pinim Al Tayer brings down that it says Ba'avata Tetzavis Bnei Yisrael V'yichoy Lecha Shemen Zayich Zach Kassis Lamoyer, that the Bnei Yisrael should take pure aleph oil to be crushed for illumination to light the eternal light of the Menorah. Yirmiyah compares Klal Yisrael to Zayis Ranon, a flourishing olive tree that's beautiful. And why did Yirmiyah compare our Avos to an olive tree? And one perish is that all liquids mix with one another, but oil stands by itself. Klal Yisrael does not mix with other nations. Laisis Chatein, we're not allowed to intermarry with them. Sfas Emes explains that oil's nature prevents it from mixing with water. Hashem made a unique nature of the Bnei Yisrael like oil, that even if we fall into sin and distance ourselves from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we still remain distinct from our non-Jewish neighbors. And that Laisis Chatein creates that. And no matter what, it does not work, we'll always remain separate. And we know, you know, in World War II and other situations where as much as you try to hide your Jewishness, it stands out, it comes out. Ultimately, they don't mix. And to connect this with Kedushin, he brings down a beautiful insight pertaining to spiritual union between an Ish and an Isha and a Kaddish Baruch Hu. When a couple brings a Kaddish Baruch Hu into the equation of their marriage, it sanctifies their relationship, and we're going to discuss that now and see how it connects with this week's parsha. Now, there's a book called The River, the Kettle, and the Bird by the Rosh Hashiva Neri Sor, Aaron Feldman, and it talks about three stages of marriage. The first stage is like a river which connects two cities. You have merchandise that shift from one city to another, and the bridge connects the two communities. A couple in the first stage is like a man and a woman begin their marriage. They have a good relationship, but they're two separate entities with a bridge or a river that allows them to fulfill each other's needs. In the secular world, this bridge is called love. It's really self-love in a certain way. It's a business relationship that benefits each one, for themselves. That's the first stage of marriage, where you have two separate cities, two separate entities connected by a bridge or a river so that they could channel merchandise one to the other and fulfill their needs that way. The second stage of marriage is like a kettle of water that rests on the stove. There's a fire on the stove and water in the kettle, and they work together to create boiling water or steam, and each one needs the other. The fire on the stove itself doesn't do much, just like the water in the kettle is inactive without the fire. You need the fire and the water, but they themselves cannot coexist. So you have this kettle that separates them, allowing them to coexist, in which they could achieve the mutual goal to function in the manner that they need to boil that water. Similar, a couple in this stage will work together towards achieving mutual goals. They each have their own tasks, but they remain their own individuals. When that goal is realized, and they work together. They work together that way, and that's the second stage of marriage. The third stage of marriage, which is the rarest, is like a bird. A bird has two ways that it allows itself to move forward. It uses its legs. It uses its wings. There's times for each one to function. Sometimes a bird needs to walk also, so it uses its legs. In other situations, it needs to fly. It uses its wings. Legs and wings have different functions and different goals, but they're both organs of the same body. If a bird is missing legs, it's a balmum. The bird is missing wings, it's a balmum. It's blemished. Therefore, a marriage relationship is the same. You have a husband and wife, various functions, separate goals, but they're united in marriage. And they're like one body. That's the perfect unity of marriage when they are combined that way. Looking at themselves as a view, as a one entity, which is not so common and is rare. But it's something to strive for and to get to. Couples who live that way are in complete harmony. And there's tranquility in their home. They're compatible. They're not just compatible like a river or like a kettle. that separates two separate communities or entities, but here they are like one. Their souls are united because they bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the picture. It's kedai to review this yesod, but the yesod behind this is that third aspect of marriage is more unique to Klal Yisrael more than the Ummas HaOlam, because this shows how our souls are uniquely Jewish. Our souls are uniquely one. We're really one whole soul, and certainly a husband and wife uniting in a Jewish marriage together there's a oneness that's beyond parallel. Now the Sfas Emes says that there's two stages with the oil. There's Kasis Lamor, the first drops is pure olive oil, free from any impurities, and that's kosher for the menorah. And then you have the second stage, which has somewhat blemish, but that could be used, the second pressings, secondary oil, which could be used for the menachis. The first drops of oil, the pure essence of oil, is connected to when Klal Yisrael, where the relationship was pure, when there was a Nasa V'Nishma at Har Sinai. They revealed a total commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and desire to fill out His will. The secondary oil, which has some dregs in it, it symbolizes what happens at later time when they sinned with the Egel and their pure hearts were somewhat diminished by the Yetzirah that came about. And nevertheless, even in that stage, Yirmiyahu HaNavi calls the nation a thriving olive tree, even at that time. And to find favor in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eyes, Sfas Emes explains, we have to squeeze out the oil from the dregs. And that happens through tshuva and Maisim Tovim. So we need to realize these secondary oils, although it cannot be used for the menorah, it could be used for the menachos. It could be used for the flower offering. And that itself is extremely valuable. A person who needs to understand that, eventually he'll get to a point where he'll be able to become that Shemen Zayas Zach again, that pure oil that could be used for the menorah. But in the meantime, one needs to understand, as long as they try to do tshuva and work on themselves, and even if there are no lower matzav, a yid has within them that kedusha of that drop of oil that could be used for the menachos, which also has an extremely great value to it. Another beautiful pshat that the Panim and HaTorah brings is like this, is that the first pure oil had to be with a lot of special efforts to be crushed a certain way, and it had a tremendous great quality, and that quality represents Talmud Torah. The Ksav Sefer says this, that Talmud Torah could only be acquired through Yegiyah, through working very hard through it. You got the Umatzas Taman. If you worked hard and you got there, then you believe him. And Kosis Lamor represents the idea of pushing yourself for Torah study, Yegiyas HaTorah, which does not come easily, does not come easy to light that light of Torah, and it requires a lot of effort. The Kosis L'Menachos, which means for the livelihood, because the Karb Mincha was brought from flour, and the flour symbolizes Parnasa, he does not have to exert himself that much. Whatever Shtadlis he does will be enough, and the rest is in Hashem's hands. And, of course, you have to do your necessarily shtadlis, but the idea is have a mamayit be'esav asek b'teira, whatever you could do to minimize the work and to maximize your Torah study is best. And again, you know, everyone could do what they can do with it, but the idea is the Ksav Sefer brings down that the kosis lamor, the first pressings that require special work and effort, represents the Torah, and the kosis lamenachos, which is the secondary effort, refers to the Oila Parnasa, which you have to do. You have to do your shtadlis, but the Iker Yegiye, the Iker Yesod of it, needs to be for Torah. Now, for those of us, many of us, which we know that just the way Hashem worked it, that our normal hishtadlis requires us, that many of our hours is for Parnasa and less hours are for Torah. But nevertheless, it's still your Mekayim when it says that your melacha is arai and your Torah is ikar, if what your real priority is. If someone has to work from 9 to 5 or 9 to 6, however he has to work, and nevertheless comes home and makes that commitment to be miyageya in Torah when he needs his kviyas itim, and he can only do it for 2 hours or whatever he could do it for, those 2 hours, it's not just a matter of the quantity of the time, but the quality and what's the priority of the time. If the Rabbi Shalom created a matzav where in most of your waking hours you have to be in at work, but at night, or whenever you could squeeze it in, Matzah Shabbos, and Sundays, if you could be off Sundays, and squeeze in the Torah and work the Torah, that shows your kvias in Torah. It's not just a kvias in quantity of time, but it's the kvias of the quality in time. It shows how you're really committed. And very often, if someone learns sincerely in those 2 hours that he could, or whatever hours he could, after a long day's work, this is showing his deep commitment to the Torah and to Torah values, and that is making the Torah as an ikker, even though in zman, in quantity, it's not the ikker, because most of the quantity of your time in a given day is you're at work, but it is the kvias, and it shows how you're emphasizing its importance based on the quality, on being meisa nefesh in that learning that you're doing in that time that you're able to learn. Bracha natzlacha.